The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Very interesting program we've got on tap for you this afternoon. We're going to be talking about consecrated life, but specifically the sisters at Christ the Bridegroom Monastery. It's not something I know a great deal about. I've done a lot of homework on it, but I really look forward to learning quite a bit today. And the person that's going to lead us through this is Sister Petra. Sister, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be here.
You're out in Burton, Ohio. Tell me about the monastery.
Well, we're a Byzantine monastery in the Ruthenian Rite. We live the traditional Eastern monastic model, which has two pillars of prayer and hospitality. So our life is based here at the monastery, and the idea is to draw people to the monastery in order to, like, give them an opportunity to pray and have retreat so that they can share the life of the Trinity, which is the heart of our life.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, the gospel at weekday mass, I believe it was, maybe it was the weekend, was Christ the Bridegroom, and that's the life you're living, to live a life that through with Christ is almost like a spousal sort of a love, an intimate. Tell me about that.
Well, we always use the word spousal when we're talking about our spirituality, because as one of the nuns joked recently, we're sort of like housewives for Jesus, welcoming people into his church, into his home, and into our hearts, bringing life. Like, we have a big ministry to priests, but really to anybody who wants to pray, whether they're Catholic or not. So we pray four times a day in the chapel. Our office is pretty long. We sing all of our prayers. And then in the midst of that, we do all of the other work that you would have in a large home, you know, meals to serve people, prepping custinias, which is what we call our cabins where people come on retreat, spiritual direction, retreats, that sort of thing.
Is it possible for an individual just to come out and want to spend a day or
absolutely.
A couple of days?
Almost exclusively we have just individuals. So, yeah.
Okay. What drew you to this type of a life? How did your calling evolve?
Well, I didn't intend it, which you might hear often, but I intended it less than anyone, I think, because I was Protestant, and so I didn't have any sense of celibacy as a path. I definitely grew up with this expectation, not just an expectation, took it totally for granted that I would marry and have a family. And yet the very things that were leading to my conversion were the same desires that once I came into the church in 2009 were going to come to fruition in the monastic life, and I just took me a long time to put that together. The Eastern manifestation of that was so far out of my radar that it had never entered my mind. So I had this keen instinctual desire, like in high school, early college, that I didn't have the language for it, but it was this idea of like the sanctification of time. Like life shouldn't be compartmentalized, but some kind of unified whole. And I felt that the church had some role in this. Like the church should help us live these unified, integrated lives, even though I didn't know what the church was at that point. I mean, the church was where I went on Sunday, I suppose. But that's what later would sort of be fulfilled and come to fruition in the monastic life, where the entirety is like offered up to God, and even the most mundane thing becomes this point of union and this gift of self in response to the one who's giving himself to you.
So the holistic approach, I suppose.
Let
me ask you this. What was the reaction of family and friends when you discerned this?
Well, I had been Catholic at that point for many years. Well, I say many, 7 or 8 years. And so those that were really close to me were not at all surprised. I think I was more surprised than anyone, because this just wasn't the plan. But many people, when I told them with something of dread, like, oh, how do I break this to them? They just said, even my Protestant friends, yeah, this makes sense. Yeah, we can see that this would have happened. And I was like, how can you see it? I sure couldn't see it.
So they were seeing it from the outside, and you were discerning it on the inside.
Yes, very much. I've been moved by, I don't know if it's an understanding, but the openness and the openness of my Protestant family and friends, of whom I still have many. They're curious. They don't quite understand, but they honor and respect the desire to pour out their lives for Jesus, my life for Jesus, because it's something that they can share.
A lot of people know about the Roman Catholic Church, and a lot of Byzantines know about the Roman Catholic Church, but I'm not sure the reverse of that is true. What drew you to the Byzantine Rite?
Well, it was very direct. I wasn't drawn to the Byzantine Rite. My story is unusual in that it was like the Lord smacked me over the head. I have a friend in Lancaster who is on staff at a parish, and they did like an adult ed series for a month or so. And a Melkite priest came down and he gave like education. He gave some talks on the Byzantine Rite. And I was like, wow, that's really beautiful. And I looked at my friend Gina and I said, but I would never be Byzantine. Like, that's nice for somebody else. And then a couple years later, I had been discerning, I had received a call to consecrate, like, my life to Christ, like a celibate call, but I wasn't sure what that was looking like. And I was on a very different, I say very different, another form of consecrated life. I was on that path, and I came on Pustinia, which did not seem like a threatening thing to do. My friend had gone on one, and she was talking about these nuns, and I came on Pustinia, and my world just sort of fell apart. I was just unprepared for what happened. It was like a Friday through a Sunday. It was a horrible snowstorm, and it was just a blizzard the whole time I was in the Pustinia, and I was praying. I was praying about Lent, because Lent was coming, and I was praying about the steps that I was about to take in my vocation, and I was like, Lord, I don't know for sure that this is what you want, but you've led me this far. And so unless you show me otherwise, I'm just going to walk forward. Like, the burden is on you. My spiritual father had really taught me to, he called it telling Jesus to be a man. Like, you know, you have to take care of this. I'm just this finite poor creature, and I can only understand so much. So I said, Jesus, this is my understanding. If this isn't your will, you need to let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting there in the silence of the Pustinia, and it's one of those times when the words that just sprang into my heart were so clear, and he said, be poor with me. To be poor is to be dependent. Trust me. And I knew it was his voice. I recognized it, but I was also sort of befuddled, like, Jesus, that's beautiful, but that's not what I asked you. Like, what does that have to do with anything? But I knew it was his voice, so I sat with it, and I prayed with it the rest of the day. I'd learned enough about my own poverty to recognize, like, he's calling me to identification with him in the poverty he chose to assume in the incarnation. So it's, you know, Pustinia ends, it's just great. And then the next day I go to Divine Liturgy for the first time in my life in the chapel. It's a Sunday morning, and I walk into the chapel, and I'm standing there, and I'm looking at these six nuns who are all strangers. And somehow in the middle of the liturgy, I am just blindsided by this very strong sense of belonging that makes me panic, because I'm like, what the heck? Like, this is entirely unfamiliar liturgy. These nuns are complete strangers to me. Like, what's happening?
Wow.
But I also knew, like, okay, panic is not of God. So, Lord, if this is from you, you need to tell me later. Like, right now, I'm just in Sunday liturgy trying to worship. So you need to tell me later. And within a couple minutes, it just went away completely, and I was at peace, and I entered into the liturgy, and it was beautiful. And I just thought that it was just some kind of, you know, aberration from left field. So after liturgy, one of the nuns came, and she said, do you want to come over for brunch? And I'm an introvert, and inside I'm like, no, but that sounded rude. So I said, sure. So I went to get my things, and I turned my phone on, which hadn't been on. And I was supposed to go to my spiritual father that afternoon at a parish nearby here. And he texted and said, well, why don't I just come out to the monastery for direction today? And I was like, okay. All right. So I ended up having time that I hadn't planned to spend with the nuns. Like, I ate with them. I did dishes. Mother told me about the history of the monastery, sort of filled me in on, like, what life is like here.
Let's pause right there, sister.
Beautiful hours.
Yeah, mm-hmm. let's pause right there. We're going to, I think, probably a good place to pick up after we take a quick break here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio, is a day in the life at the monastery. We hope everyone will stay tuned. We'll be right back. Sister Petra is joining us on God Calling. She is a nun at Christ the Bridegroom Monastery. Sister, before the break, we talked about this, how you had this affinity with these nuns that you had nothing in common with other than a love of Jesus Christ, I suppose. You melded with them well. What is a day in the life at the monastery like? I have it in front of me, actually, your weekly, the weekday schedule, and it's a lot of prayer work.
Start matins at 6:30, mm-hmm. and it goes until about 8, which includes 15 minutes of the Jesus prayer in silence. And then from 8 to 10, we have an hour for, we call it spousal prayers, but our hour-long cell rule that we pray in our cells, and then an hour of exercise. And then at 10 o'clock, we come out and we do work until noon when we pray one of the hours, first, third, sixth, and ninth hour, which is about 30 minutes. And then we eat on our own, and we do work until 3:45 when we have free time until Vespers at 4:45, which is about it. The length varies depending on the season, but it's between 45 minutes and an hour usually. Mm-hmm. And then we have dinner together. We do dishes. And then in the evening, we either do more work or we have community activities, or sometimes we have free time or something like that. And then we have compline at 9 o'clock.
What type of work? I know hospitality is something, a word that I see often on the website.
We all have different kinds of work. One of the nuns used to be an accountant, and she's our bookkeeper. One of the nuns used to be, she has a background in communications, and she takes care of our newsletter and our online presence and that sort of thing. Two of us are Pustinia coordinators, and so we work just like flipping the Pustinia spaces between guests so that they're always ready to go for the next person. We all have cleaning obediences. We all have cooking obediences. Some of the nuns give spiritual direction during every month. Like, we all have spiritual direction ourselves, so that takes up time. Writing talks, giving retreats, anything that goes into just hospitality. Like, I did laundry today. I did a lot of laundry today. That sort of thing.
It gets back to the basics, poverty, chastity, and obedience, I suppose.
Yes, emphatically.
It's funny. One of the missions, as laid out by Pope John Paul II for your order, is the new evangelization, which is reaching out. My grandfather had a sister who was a cloistered nun. Now, he was born in 1886, I think. So this is a long time ago. But in the 60s, when we'd go visit, she was behind a screen. And then at some point in time, that order dropped that requirement. And she reminded me of you, sister. Very bubbly, very boy. She used to like to go to Buffalo Bill games and things like that. So you're not just at the monastery. Reaching out and spreading the word of Jesus Christ is very important to you and your order.
It is very important. So in the traditional Eastern model, the life is very much based at the monastery. So, like, the heart of monasticism isn't active, like going out to an active apostolate, even though we're very active in our daily lives. The idea is really that there's this hiddenness to our lives of prayer, and that's what we are seeking to draw people into. so that they can almost like pass through any encounter with us and just find the Trinity. Because the Trinity that's hidden in me is the Trinity that's hidden in every person we're encountering if they're baptized. And so that takes the form of responding to requests from people for direction, for retreat. We get emails, we get phone calls, people are asking us for prayer. People come to pray Vespers with us. They come to liturgy on Sunday, providing a place in silence in the Custinias for them to meet Christ in that intimate, you know, it's like the intimacy of a one-on-one encounter in prayer. But as far as like more active work, every summer except this year because of COVID, we have a girls' camp here at the monastery. We often would have a girls' sleepover for teenage girls, just to like teach them things about vocations, all the vocations. Like at camp, we always focus on married life, the single life, and the consecrated life, because you know that they're all drawn to one of these vocations. And then we do give talks, but we've really scaled back on the number that we give outside of the monastery, just because it was kind of eroding our community life and the monastic life that should be based here, so that the rhythm and the schedule can really sort of foster the stillness that comes from prayer. Though interestingly, with the pandemic, there's been more talks because like this, we can do it from the monastery, which opens more possibilities in some ways. And we've also started live streaming our services around certain feast days and that sort of thing to give people a chance to pray with us from home.
Something I saw on your website described it pretty aptly, which was that the order, you embrace new technology without becoming of the world.
Yes, we try not to be dependent on it, but we absolutely recognize that it has useful applications. Like, we have cell phones that we use when we travel, but we don't carry them on our persons. We don't have any technology in ourselves other than, like, alarm clocks. And it's just to foster, again, like, the stillness of being present interiorly with Christ, so that when somebody's in front of you, you can actually be focused on this person in front of you, instead of the dings of the phone or things like that. But I mean, like, we all use Skype for spiritual direction. For those of us whose spiritual fathers live far away, we absolutely live stream things, that sort of thing. It's just like using it as a tool and not something that's essential to your being or that's getting in the way of the personal encounter.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break right there, sister. I'm very interested in your community life and as well that beautiful gospel that I mentioned earlier, Christ the Bridegroom, and being ready, because you don't know when the time will be. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Paul Orlowski here on AM 1260 The Rock. The name of the program is God Calling. We're back on God Calling. This is Paul Orlowski, and I'm with Sister Petra of Christ the Bridegroom Monastery. And Sister, we were talking about your life at the monastery and the rigorous schedule of work, prayer, and contemplation. But there's time as well for, I suppose, probably a dumb word to use maybe, but sisterhood with the other nuns.
Absolutely. Yes, we have. It's funny because we have like community recreation is the technical term on Sunday nights, but it's really around the dinner table that we're sharing our lives. We're sharing reflections. We're sharing, you know, I got this news today and this is what it makes me think. And we're discussing things that are happening in the church as we're learning about them. We have dinner reading at the beginning. So right now we're reading the Screwtape Letters. Usually we read something from a saint, but somebody suggested this and we were like, yeah. And so, and then also like as we're working, sometimes we'll have conversation when we're doing dishes together, that sort of thing. But during free time, we're often taking walks, playing games, doing puzzles, just sharing life like alongside one another. And you get to know one another. You get to know each other's families. You come to really love the other people's families and they feel like your aunts and uncles. And then you are like, oh, now I understand you better.
Yeah.
And they feel the same way. But as my spiritual father likes to remind me, this is not a sorority. It's not a Christian sorority. because these are, like, community life is purifying because you're often with people that you would never choose to live with. And the beautiful gift of that is that I've found friendship with people who have such different personalities from me that in the world, I would have just been like, oh, we don't have anything in common and just sort of not really sought to know them. But when you're living alongside them, you're really like striving and praying for the grace to see them, like see their beauty with Christ's eyes. And then you recognize, wow, like I would have just missed this treasure that's hidden in my sister. And the mediation of their eyes is helping you like recognize the treasure of yourself too, and heal like the wounds I think most of us have on some level of like self-rejection and wishing you were different, and just accepting, wow, God created us and we're gifts to each other. We're gifts to each other in our weaknesses as well as our strengths, because when they have to bear with my weaknesses and that afflicts them, it's purifying and it happens both ways.
Back to, I mentioned before the commercial break, the beautiful gospel, Christ the Bridegroom. And you know, as a young kid, I had this vision of people standing out there with these lamps as opposed to the bigger message and the imagery that's being used in that. But you don't know when he will come. Be prepared. And
yes.
That's kind of well ingrained in the lives that you're all living at the monastery.
Yeah, you know, we have a very unusual patron. In the East, monasteries are named for saints. But Mother Theodora, when she started this monastery of Bishop John, it was really on her heart that it needed to be Christ the Bridegroom. We have matins during Holy Week on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's called Bridegroom Matins. It's a very special service. So our patronal tropar that we sing at Compline every night is from Bridegroom Matins, and it's very much enjoining this watchfulness. Like, it has the lines, "Beware, therefore, O my soul, lest you fall into a deep slumber." And so it's just like calling to us every night to be attentive, because we don't know when he'll come, and we want to make sure that we have oil in our lamp. And the oil is love, and ultimately, like, he's the one giving us the oil to give back to him, you know? It's not like we just grit our teeth and will it. We're responding to the grace that he's giving to all of us, really. Like, he's the bridegroom of every soul, even though we're often uncomfortable in our culture with that sort of imagery.
Am I being too short here when I say that what you're working on is that intimate relationship, that spousal love that you talked about somewhat earlier?
No, that's absolutely true. Yes.
I saw something else on one of your websites that talked about developing a healthy, integrated view of the human person, body, and soul.
Mm-hmm. Yes. John Paul II's theology of the body is very important to us. It's central to the formation of each of us. We go to the Theology of the Body Institute out of Philadelphia, has immersion courses, like week-long ones, and so we go to 1, 2, and 3, each nun does, and then we've gone to others about the interior life, the way of beauty, but it's really just to give us a lens to interact with and reclaim the goodness of the material creation, because even as Catholics, we have this tendency to want to be dualistic and to say, well, you know, our relationship with God is strictly spiritual, and matter is, if anything, matter is bad. Like, how often do Christians unintentionally speak heresy? Like, well, you know, one day we won't have our bodies anymore. Well, no, like, the resurrection, Christianity is unique in affirming the goodness of our bodies, and we will be resurrected in bodies like Christ. Christ and the Theotokos are in heaven in their bodies, and so our bodies are essentially good. You know, like, reorienting and contextualizing our desires, because in every desire is a quest or a hunger for God himself. Yeah.
And that really gets back to something, again, that I read in doing some homework for this program, is in today's world, the misuse of both material items as well as sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so often that it's not more arguments and words that our culture needs. It's joyful witnesses. And so what the Lord, particularly for us, is calling us to embody is just joyful celibacy. There is a fulfillment without, you know, our culture's image of romance or emotional, you know, like the Hallmark movies make you feel like that's all you need to be happy. but real love is just being stripped down and purified in the cross. And that's what real love is. And that's what we're constantly crying out to the Lord to do in us.
I'll close with a joke I heard, sister. Somebody told me that what has 5 actors, 15 scenes, and 1 plot? 662 Hallmark movies.
That's great.
Yeah. My wife watches them. Sometimes she'll watch one at noon. And about 1:35, that's when there's a conflict. And then about 2 minutes to 2, everything's nice, and they found true happiness. Sister, this has been delightful, but feel free to tell the joke. It's a nice, clean one.
I will.
Sister Petra, thank you very much. And, Sister, if people want to come out, they can contact Christ the Bridegroom Monastery in Burton, Ohio.
Absolutely. Send us an email. Our poustinias fill up a few months in advance because they're in a lot of demand, even though we only have four of them. But give us an email and we can get you scheduled.
And you got christthebridegroom.org as well. That's where I found a lot of useful information. Sister Petra, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Paul.
And thank you for joining us out here on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. I'm Paul Orlowski. Hope to see you 1 week from today. We hope you enjoyed this edition of God Calling. If you would like us to bring you more locally produced original programming, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to AM 1260, The Rock. You can do it at our website at am1260therock.com or by calling 216-227-1260 during normal business hours. AM 1260 The Rock is listener-supported, and we need your support to keep Cleveland Catholic Radio broadcasting for generations to come.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.